Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, I read your quote in the paper this morning. How are you tonight?
you mean the quote for tomorrow morning's paper, which I understand.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, tomorrow morning's paper. Yeah, you know, certainly our phone lines are open. A lot of discussion going on in our city, if you will. The county attorney, Michael Freeman, announces at 11 o'clock this morning that there will be no grand jury, Don. And I'm like, wow, you know, and I assume there will be some discussion and reflection. We'll certainly be talking about it. And we'll also be analyzing tonight some of the statements that have been made by members of the NAACP about how the Clark situation is going to be handled, and et cetera. By the way, county attorney indicates that he expects to make a decision by the end of this month. My calendar says there's basically 2.5 weeks left in the month of March, right? So that's going to be very, very interesting. But the phone lines, of course, will be open. I want to do a quick, like I said, any questions with regards to my statements in tomorrow morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I'm, you know, one of those that think that that was a bad decision not to give it to the grand jury, give the grand jury an opportunity to make a decision, because I just don't think that county attorney is going to charge the officers. But we have an in-depth analysis of what will happen if he does, if you will, what that will mean. So, you know, sometimes you may get what you don't wish for. But, Don, the national, a lot of violence over the past weekend, the fighting and battling in cities all across the country, if you will. Donald Trump running into problems in Kansas City, Chicago, Dayton, Ohio, Rockford. I mean, looks like some things are happening, man. You know, he's saying if they attempt to stop him, there will be riots in the United States.
You know what? I'm watching this, and, you know, as I've said a dozen times before, the media has created Donald Trump. But if Donald Trump was there in Chicago, Kansas City, New York, wherever, and he was having a reality show where the winner would win $1 million for life, you know, every year for life, all the same people rioting right now would be lined up to audition for his show. So this is something generated by not only liberals, but I'm not going to blame the liberals this time. I guess I'm going to stay away from that. I'm looking at what the RNC, what Ted Cruz, Mitt Romney, Mark Rubio, fighting against him verbally has started. And it's catastrophic for the Republican Party. And this shouldn't be happening, because when Donald Trump was a businessman, when he did his show on TV, I can't remember the name of it, but shows you how much
wasn't entitled The Boss or something like that?
something like that, The Boss, or Who Wants to Be the Boss, or something like that. One of our callers can call in and let us know. Yeah. And callers, just a minute, we'll be right with you. You know, this wasn't happening. This wasn't going on. This is just to the point where, you know, this guy who's a billionaire, allegedly, self-financed a campaign, and he pulled a nerve with some Americans. And some people you know, I've been arguing on Facebook, Mr. Edwards, with people on the left. I just says, you know what? It doesn't matter who you support for president in 2016, because what you think is right is what you think is what's right, period. Okay, so don't argue. Don't tell me you're going to unfriend me on Facebook because it doesn't make no sense, because I'm not going to stop being your friend. But they have taken this with the propaganda from media to a whole new pitch. I actually tweeted him tonight privately in a message and asked him to come on our show. Because
who,
I think
Donald Trump?
Yes, I did. You know, I don't know if he would ever do it, but I tweeted him. I said, hey,
sure,
radio. And we need to find out if you're a racist or not. You know, I want to know. So, but anyway,
President today announced his nominee for the United States Supreme Court, a gentleman who is the chief judge of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. Actually was the prosecutor. I well remember him back in the day, was the prosecutor in the Oklahoma City bombings and the ultimate conviction of McVeigh, who ultimately was put to death. Merrick Garland. It seems to be, you know, middle of the road and et cetera, but the Republicans are already saying they don't intend to give him a hearing and even go through the process. that's going to be interesting. So it's going to be, this is an old phrase, but boy, it's going to really be a hot spring and hot summer here in the United States, no doubt about it.
And Mr. Edwards, don't mean to switch up on you, but, you know, we have our special guest is actually holding. And I think it's time we should bring him on.
All right, let's bring him on
in style. Okay,
okay.
Let's get his intro going that I had ready for him here. Okay, let me just 1 second. Okay, Coach McKenzie.
Yes, sir.
You are live on the
air.
Can
you hear me?
Welcome to the Ron and yes, I can hear you loud and clear. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. Congratulations, I guess, are in order. And, I mean, Mr. Edwards is the sports person because I hate to admit this to you. I don't watch any sports at all. but I know that North High Polars won the men's championship. And, Mr. Edwards, if you'd like to insert it from there, that'd be great.
Yes, sir. Well, first of all, welcome again, Coach McKenzie. I had a chance to listen to you on Urban Contemporary Station here on Sunday. Really appreciated your comments. First time in 13 years, North High.
First time in 13 years, yes, since 2003.
Not the first time for you, though. You've had a number. In fact, Coach McKenzie is already in the Minnesota Coaches High School Hall of Fame, so... to our national, international audience, this man is already a legend here in our beloved state. But he's taken a Class 1A high school that people wanted to shut down a couple years ago. Said it had no purpose, if you will. The principal there, she has done a wonderful job of getting the school back on track of the football and basketball coaches. And once again, our compliments to Charles Adams III for the excellent performance of his football team the last couple of seasons, along with you. But I just enjoyed watching the performance of North's boys basketball team. Just kind of give us a feel of what you were feeling going into the game, during the game, and after the game.
You know what, to be honest with you, I mean, our guys probably since late February, so we ended up actually giving away a game to Washburn latter part of February. And after that game, you know, one of the things I was trying to tell our guys that, you know, sometimes you just can't turn it on and turn it off. But after that game, I mean, our guys were really, really focused. And so going into the weekend, to be honest with you, in terms of the championship, I knew we would win. I knew we would win by a substantial amount. You know, a lot of people expected us to continue to beat teams by 40, 50 points. You know, games got a little closer, but I think we ended up with average margin of close to 40 points in the section and finals and state finals. So I was really confident. These guys were focused. you know, we had lost the section finals. We had just missed going to the state the previous 2 years when these guys were freshmen and sophomores. And so I just knew that they knew what they needed to do. And so just went in with a lot of confidence, and they came through.
Tell us, share with us, because obviously our listening audience are African-Americans, but we have a lot of people that tune in. Give us your observation, because you have not only been a long-time educator, coach, and et cetera, but, you know, you actually have been an activist and a full participant in the cultivation of young African-Americans. What is it you're feeling that this achievement, this victory has done for the pride of the community?
Well, you know, first and foremost, I think what it's done for my young men in particular, it's taught them the importance of setting goals. You know, we set some goals out early on. And one of the things that I've just observed, many of us, you know, so many people just live life. And so I really, you know, do things so that our guys can understand. I mean, you set goals. I mean, sometimes you hit roadblocks, but it doesn't keep you from, you know, achieving those goals. So that was important. And then this was about the community, Ron, as you said. You know, 4 years ago, I mean, the doors were, you know, I mean, North High was left for dead.
Yes, it was.
When I walked in, there were only 69 students enrolled. You know, as you said, I mean, our athletic programs have grown. I mean, we've taken advantage of the young men that we've had. Football team lost in the championship game of 1A this year and had a great season. And as you said, Charles Adams III has just done a tremendous job in terms of building that program, and the basketball program has come alongside of that. So this was bigger than North High. This was about community, you know.
All right.
And you know, that's what we communicated to them all along. And it's just been amazing. I mean, I go out in the community now. I mean, you have, you know, people, the older elders in the community who are very appreciative of what the young men accomplished. I got first graders who are saying they want to play at North High. So, you know, so from a school to go, you know, really be left from bed, you know, to really now to have not just life, but just a life of celebration. This has certainly been about community.
Right, and I just hope that our community and other communities understand that. Tell us a little bit about the support staff that you have. When I say support staff, I'm talking about Principal Barry. I'm talking about your athletic director, Leo Lewis.
Well, the support, you know,
tell me a little bit about them.
You know, I mean, Dr. Barry has just been a blessing. I mean, she's the person that brought me in, you know, gave me an opportunity to build a program the way we build it. Dr. Lewis, I mean, you know, nobody can be more supportive than him. I mean, so I've got a lot of support in the building. I mean, principal, assistant principal, you know, all of the staff. I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, that building is really a family. You know, we talk about one team, one goal. And that extends beyond the basketball court. That's really the way we operate throughout the building.
Tell us just a little bit about Coach McKenzie. That kind of start us out. I heard your reflections about your roots in Florida. Just walk us through a little bit about your collegiate and then coming into the system. Your championships at Patrick Henry, a couple other stops before you came in to revitalize a program at Minneapolis North. Just and by the way, I also heard the very kind remarks, if you will, very emotional remarks about both your parents, your father and your mother, and their pride in watching your success. But tell us a little bit about Coach McKenzie.
Well, I mean, as you said, I mean, I grew up in Miami, Florida, and started out like a lot of kids, had some challenges. Went to a small school in Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin River Falls. Actually started out in corporate America and got into coaching, just trying to spend some more time with my son. And did that for
By the way, let me just cut in and say this, who was quite a Division I player himself, first at the University and later at the University of Oklahoma. We don't want to forget that. He was quite a player in his own right.
Yeah, well, he played at for me at Patrick Henry, and we were, you know, that was a blessing in itself to win four championships with him on that team at Patrick Henry. Like you said, went on to University of Oklahoma and then played, finished, and got his degree from the University of Minnesota. So my daughter played Division I basketball at Norfolk State, graduated, and actually did her internship in Obama's first administration at the White House. So,
All right. Now, see, a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. And so, like I said, I started out coaching in the park board and actually went to Patrick Henry as a volunteer coach in 1996, spent a year there, and then was offered the job. And I always say the rest is history, and we were able to turn that program around, took them to their first championship that they had won since 1955. But I want to say this, Ryan. The most important thing, to be honest with you, that I've done in my now 17 years of coaching is, you know, to date I have 100% graduation, primarily African-American males. I did spend 5 years at Academy of Holy Angels. But 100% graduation, 100% college. I mean, all of my players have either gone to a two-year or four-year school. You know, this year we're blessed. 75% of our kids, so 9 out of 12, are AV honor roll students, and the other ones are not far behind. So, you know, it's for me, it's been about producing student athletes from our community and just proving people wrong. I mean, you know, that if the right people are in our kids' lives, there's no such thing as this achievement gap that people are talking about.
One of the things that I took great note of, particularly given the negativities that folks try to perpetrate on not only North Minneapolis, but actually both its high schools, North and Henry, was the discipline of your players and the control and et cetera, which, I mean, we have to, in all fairness, attribute that to both their upbringing, but also your instruction as both first and foremost an educator and a coach. What is it that you would leave with the community as it pertains to the future of North High?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm excited about the program, and from a basketball standpoint, we only lose three kids. And I think, I mean, if I want to communicate anything, I think there's a lot of bad information out there about North High. North High has made some significant changes, both athletically and academically, over the last 3 years. I think 2 weeks ago, the district recognized North High as, you know, in terms of the largest increase in terms of graduation rate. Dr. Berry's done a tremendous job of getting kids focused. I think 94% of the seniors are on track to graduate. You know, you got a large number of kids, both male and female, that are making academic honor roll, receiving scholarships. So, as they would say, don't believe the hype. Some good things are going on, and I invite people to come in and see what's going on for themselves.
All right. Two other issues that I want to bring up. We want to be transparent, if you will, as black communicators. Number one, I'm hearing some complaining and whining and crying from certain quarters, even within our own conference, that why is North a Class 1A school? Of course, for those of us that have been out there a long time, it's because of their enrollment. But would you walk us through why North High School
Class 1A? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I've had to deal with a lot of that through social media and other places. You know, and that's what happens when you win and people aren't comfortable with you being on that kind of stage. But, you know, North, I mean, we have right now, I think, close to maybe 350 kids. But the thing that people don't understand, we have about 60 African-American boys that make up our football team, our basketball team, our baseball team. So, you know, that's the equivalent of a small-town school. I mean, like most of the schools that are, you know, out in outstate Minnesota. I mean, it's not like I have, you know, like the Eden Prairie or Edina or even a
And
South,
let me just cut in and
Southwest.
Say this for our national audience. The two high schools that the coach spoke of are what are called outer tier suburban schools. with enrollment in excess of almost 3,000. So, in fact, Eden Prairie probably dresses at least half of the number of what you have enrolled at North High.
Oh, no. I mean, no question. I mean, their freshman team probably have, you know, 60 kids. I mean, in varsity, I mean, they look like a college. I mean, you know, you go to some of these campuses. I mean, Wayzata, you know, like you said, Hopkins. I mean, there's no comparison for us. So, you know, and again, I mean, at one point, you know, North had 1,200 plus kids.
Yes, they did.
You know,
let me just take you back a ways. In my day, 1955 and 56, I was at Minneapolis Vocational. North had 1,600 students.
Minneapolis
Vocational
I think
had 1,500 or 1,600.
I think it's higher than 1,800
understand
kids.
That. Yeah. Let me ask you one other question as we wrap it, Coach, because I heard it, and then I heard a reference by you Sunday, if you will. And I heard a reference by the announcers doing the game last Saturday, and they happened to make mention of your bow tie. You know, and I thought, okay, that's well. Coach has always been a dapper dresser and et cetera. But then I heard something else from some reliable sources raising questions about something to have to do with the FOI, the Fruits of Islam.
Well, I mean, you know, there was a lot of jokes about our coaching staff looking like FOI. Yeah, I heard them too. But, you know, we just wanted to do something. We wanted to do something different. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And we wanted to give them something to talk about, and it sounds like we did.
Yes, you did. And I can tell you,
hey,
the two announcers kind of gave themselves away by talking about your bow tie. I thought it was a nice-looking bow tie. You know what I mean? I thought it was very professional.
Well, our staff had planned that all along. We said if once we got to the state tournament, we knew we were going to be on TV, we were going to do something different. And so
right.
That's what we
all
did.
All right. Mr. Allen, you have anything for Coach? If not, Coach, is there anything
absolutely
that you want to leave with us?
Absolutely, Mr. Edwards. I have one thing that I'd like to run by. Actually, two things. I'll just keep it short. First of all, with the success of North High's men's basketball program, football program, et cetera, do you think that will be a calling card for these children? I actually live in Columbia Heights, where it's 33% African-American, but they court children from North Minneapolis and South Minneapolis to come out here to these schools for the tax dollar, and there's some talent out here too. Do you think that the success of North High at this point would bring some of those children back to North High?
Yeah, we're already starting to see that. I mean,
okay.
I can tell you, you know, the kids that would have gone to suburban schools or even to the downtown school are now staying in North Minneapolis. It is an option for kids now.
Okay, great. Next question. In 2009, the student government of Minneapolis Community and Technical College, under the leadership of a basically all-white executive committee, cut the basketball program. With the hiring now of Sharon Pierce, an African-American woman who is now the president of MCTZ, which for domestic and internationals, Minneapolis Community and Technical College, and a little note, she was a cheerleader for them in 1972 when the team was ranked fourth in their league. Do you think, Coach McKenzie, that it's time for MCTC to pony up and start that program again since we're having so much success?
Absolutely.
Here in town?
They would have my vote. I mean, it saved a lot of lives. I mean, I can tell you, I
yes,
know so
did.
Many young men that it gave a second or a third chance, and it's much needed. And I'll have to say, you know, the coaches down there, they did a great job. So I'm hoping that they'll find the resources to bring that program back.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And by the way, I go back far enough to remember when they were nationally ranked
as
junior college and et cetera. Coach, we want to wish you the best and continued success for you and your young men and for the institution known as North High School, and congratulations once again for a job well done.
Well, let me just say thank you, and I appreciate you guys always challenging our community because we need a wake-up call.
You.
So.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir. All right.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yes, Mr. Allen. Success. You know, folks talk in terms of negativism, et cetera. Now, you know, North High School, football, basketball, cheerleaders, sports, extracurricular activities and such a success story. And a lot of the credit, as Coach McKenzie pointed out, goes to Principal Barry. She's done a tremendous job there at North High School. Okay.
And I know we have possibly
another call waiting.
Yes, sir. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
And why don't we go ahead and get them in? And by the way, we're moving towards, at the completion of the conversation with this caller, this next caller, who should be KG Wilson, we're going to move into the decision by the county attorney, Mike Freeman, to bypass the grand jury process. But, Mr. Allen, why don't we bring our next guest in?
We'd like to welcome a community activist, all-around nice guy, Mr. KG Wilson. KG, how you doing?
I'm truly blessed. I'm truly blessed, gentlemen. How y'all doing tonight?
Real good, KG.
Real good.
Good to have you with us. Let me do this, Mr. Allen. I had a conversation with KG, Wilson, on Saturday evening, and he kind of briefed me of some things that he was doing, some concerns that he had. I then heard him the following day on a urban contemporary station, and he was making an appeal to the community, if you will. KG, kind of walk us through the alert about the possibility of problems at the St. Patrick Day festivities in downtown Minneapolis tomorrow.
Okay, well, first of all, you know, we have to kind of go back in our memory. I think that those that do know kind of forgot. And for those that don't know what happened last year, this time on St. Patrick's Day, I don't know, I can't even count the number of youth that were downtown Minneapolis. There is a Fox 9 YouTube video that is available now as we are speaking of what happened down there. And it was a St. Patrick's Day massacre, I'm calling it, where youth were stumped out to the ground, 10, 15, 20 youth. Jumping one youth and stomping them out. Children had to be subdued and sprayed with mace to make them disperse from probably killing other children. Also, there was children down there in the midst. If you look at the video, in the midst of this violence, that were close to toddler ages down there with their young, I'd have to say children, parents. And in the midst of this, just standing around watching and kids just running around, just crazy and anger and rage, and just all you could just see is black-on-black hatred and violence all over the place. I could see more red blood from our black youth than I could see the color green that you would expect to see on St. Patrick's Day.
Okay, okay. Now, are there some indicators, unfortunately, that that we could have an additional problem unless we have some kind of plan by you know, noon tomorrow to have some assistance in the form of volunteers and et cetera to help deal with what could be a potential problem? I understand you have been recruiting volunteers, older African-American men and women, to be of some assistance, but I understand that far too many of our organizations have been somewhat silent on this. So what is the situation? What does the situation look like tomorrow?
Well, on my end, as you know, Sunday, I made a call out to the community, far as community leaders, community members, and definitely caring and unfearing parents, because as you know, this is children that are down here that are in these click wars, the drugs and the violence that's going on. So these children, most of them have parents, and so I definitely was making a call out that I felt like some of the parents should come down there where the children are. If they're down there creating havoc and different things down here hurting each other, maybe the parents should come out. And I put a call out to any volunteers, any men that would be willing to come out and come down there and walk these particular blocks where this violence is going on as a presence of peace, promoting peace and providing peace. And so we want to be, for so long, dear brothers, the community have been reactive. And so in 2016, coming again out of my second retirement, I'm going to be proactive. And so I'm trying to get the community together to understand that we have to be down there when they come. You know,
let me ask you this question. Let me ask this question because I'm also aware that there have been some expression of concern by some of the organizers of the St. Paddy's or St. Patrick's Day activities who indicate that they're not going to book any of the disrespect or threats or et cetera. And so, I mean, are we looking at the possibility of even racial conflict down there tomorrow?
Oh, yes, definitely. And you know what? Racist, I never can get mad at a racist because a racist does what racists do. One thing I do understand is that this is an Irish holiday. This is their celebration that they have once a year down there. And from rumors have said that they're not going to be disrupted this year. So other than our authority being prepared for the violence, the people who celebrate, the Irish that are celebrate, I heard are going to be down there also prepared. I've even heard that some of them will be down there not drinking at all because they know that by law they cannot be licensed carriers and use any firearm if they're using the alcohol. So they will be down there, coming down there prepared to use force if they have to. And a lot of them are licensed to carry firearms.
Okay. All right. Now, are you getting any kind of assistance, or are you in any kind of contact or communication with the Youth Coordinating Board and some of the organizations who traditionally say that they are involved in working with the youth, particularly in downtown Minneapolis?
Well, I'm going to say this to you. Not one call. Since Sunday, since I got on the radio and put the call out, I have not received not one call. Not one call at all from anyone. And I'm going to say to you that if you know me personally and anybody know me, in the beginning this was something that I was organized on my own. I've never in the 12 years that I've been active here in Minneapolis begged anyone to come and do anything with me. I put the call out that I will be going down there, and I put a call out for men to come and join me that were concerned about the violence. And I felt like I really was reaching out to the school. And
are you still there with us?
He has.
I think we've lost Mr. Wilson. We have his message. I was going to ask Mr. Allen, were there any questions that you may want to ask him? He has the number. Feel free to give us a call back, if you will, because we will now want to move into the surprising decision by the county attorney, Mike Freeman, not to impanel a grand jury in the matter of the death of Jamar Clark. By the way, give our phone number, because our phone lines will be open. We'll be going until 10 o'clock, right?
Yes, sir.
Our phone lines will be open for any discussions as it pertains to this decision by the county attorney. The Minneapolis Police Federation, by the way, has responded. We'll be talking about that tonight. Is Mr. Wilson reconnected with us, Mr. Allen?
Yes,
sir.
Yes,
he is.
Yes,
he is.
All right,
yes,
go ahead,
yes,
Mr. Wilson, complete your observations and any call
sorry,
the importance of peace.
Yeah, I don't know exactly where I got cut off, but I was actually making a call out to all the men from all these different schools that work at the schools with the children, who the children know who you are and you know who they are. And I felt like it would be a great thing for our presence to be there so the children can see us. And we're coming there to show them that we care and that we see what they're doing. We're not putting up with no shenanigans or no bull crap, but we're hoping that we can even intervene with them having to get sprayed with mace or choke holes or whatever may have happened, could happen to them because of some type of disruption or some violence that they may have.
Right, okay. Mr. Allen, you have any questions for K.G. Wilson?
Well, yeah, I'm very curious because I was just trying to, K.G., while you were talking, I was trying to pull up the TV site to see who they have awarded money to the organizations this year and last year for what you're basically doing for free downtown. And you answered one question that you said that no one has called you, but where is Mad Dads? I mean,
I don't know.
I haven't got a call.
I haven't got a call from anyone yet, Don. I haven't. And like I said, I do have some people that have already came to the table with me and said that they will be there. And so, like I said, this is about just whoever shows up to come down, and even the children will see that's who's down there fearlessly. See, this is about being fearlessly, because in the end of this, the children, we cannot be afraid of the children. We're the parents. We're the adults. And what happened, the children have brought fear into the adults. And so now the adults don't want to go down there. And then we're not thinking the way the elders said that it takes a whole village to raise a child. Now all the children are not all of ours. Nobody feels like they're responsible for all the children anymore. It's just for their children.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And
Ms.
so
Allen,
when you start thinking like that, then you can care less about all the children.
Okay.
No, that was my only question I had for him, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, okay. The other, and I raised it earlier before we got cut off first time. We have the Youth Coordinating Board, which has a nice budget. I know they have some contracts. I know that a man by the name of James Everett has been under contract for quite some time, working with the youth primarily on the light rail, the buses, and et cetera. And I was just wondering, will you be able to call upon them tomorrow for assistance and support?
Well, I could say this. I haven't talked to any of those people. I have good relationships with the people that you named. I did not know anything about what they were doing down there. I haven't seen them or nothing like that. But I'm quite sure by now they know what we're planning to do, and as an act of love and care and concern. And if they are what you say they are, and they're supposed to be down there doing this, then it would be great to see them down there. It would be great to show a show of unity amongst all of us down there.
Yeah. Well, it's factual because the information is posted in a number of places with regards to contracts and financing that goes with the responsibility to work with the youth. All right, we wish you the very best on tomorrow, and let us hope that there is a level response. But most importantly, that you get the kind of support that you need to make sure that we don't have a repeat of what happened last year and a couple years before that of the activities that have taken place. I want to thank you again, Mr. Wilson, and maybe we'll get you to give us an update, God forbid, if we do have any problems tomorrow, to give us an update next Wednesday on what happened and what the future plans are. Okay?
Yes, sir. Keep
it
in your prayer.
Thank you, sir. All right. All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Allen. Mr. Wilson wanted to remind us of things I guess we really don't want to be reminded of, and that was the conflict that's been going on downtown, if you will. Well, it's already being talked about around the country. The county attorney indicating that he's not taking the matter of the circumstances surrounding the death of Jamar Nelson. What's your take, Mr. Allen? How were you surprised by the county attorney's announcement?
I was a little surprised. Actually, I didn't know nothing about it. I was sideswiped and ran over because I said, what? Then I kept thinking, Mr. Edward, because I had posted it and on social media, you know, that we were going to talk about it tonight on the show, too. And I said, wait a minute. Someone's getting set up and they don't know it, is what came to my mind. And I said, okay. And with that said, you know, there's been a lot of chatter on social media about, you know, these officers are going to get off. They're not going to be found guilty because the witnesses didn't get a chance to, you know, get vetted through the grand jury process, and they're going to waffle and fall. And I said, well, you know, you get what you ask for. This is what Black Lives Matter and the Minneapolis NAACP wanted. This is what they got. Let's see what happens.
Well, absolutely. They demanded it, and clearly our the county attorney decided for his reasons and et cetera. Let me do this because it's important to lay out the our process, the structure, the protocol, and et cetera. Now, with the case not going to a state grand jury, and by the way, we must remember that the federal government is also carrying on an investigation. Actually, it was initially a joint investigation, and there are certain aspects of the federal law that require and demand that that is not an option for the U.S. attorney, that in matters such as this involving the death of an individual, law enforcement, and et cetera, automatically goes to a federal grand jury. So for those that are talking about it, nothing will go to a grand jury, they need to be advised it will certainly still go to a federal grand jury. Now, that means at this particular hour that the county attorney, as my understanding, has appointed two assistant county attorneys, veteran prosecutors, to begin the preparation of examining the investigative material from the BCA, and to then make a recommendation to the county attorney relevant to our charging or not charging the police officers. Now, if the county attorney decides to charge the police officers, either both or just one, if you will, it all depends on what the investigative materials show, they will begin to prepare for trial, which then brings it into a different legal light, if you will, because at that particular point, the police officers are entitled to due process, which means that they will, though they already obviously have, will obtain counsel, as well as they'll be represented by the Federation. And that then means a very protracted process that could go on for almost a year. Because it means that people will be called to give depositions to confirm and reaffirm the testimony that they've been talking about amongst themselves in private conversations. And then you're still looking at being called before a federal grand jury and being required to give testimony under color of law. And so that is what you have at this particular hour. So those assistant county attorneys are preparing a case, a recommendation to the county attorney, who may decide to bring the information forward to the court himself, if you will. The president of the Minneapolis Police Federation, Lieutenant Robert Crowe, has said something interesting, Mr. Allen. I think it's already being posted if you check your website.
I will.
That the county attorney is showboating. And that's an interesting statement and allegation. How do you read that?
I find that, first of all, offensive and very provocative that would come out of the union president toward the county attorney. I don't think the county attorney waffled at all, or he's showboating. I don't think it's showboating, but wait. But on the other hand, Mr. Edwards, what does he know that we don't know? I mean, if these guys are going to get off, and if that's what they're thinking,
Well, then he might be showboating. And I don't mean to contradict myself, but, you know, if I had a minute to let it marinate there.
Well, here's one of the things that play is that the witnesses who have given statements, I guess, to the BCA and the FBI who conducted the joint investigation, those statements, of course, are now available. And consequently, you as a person that gave a statement or et cetera can be compelled and required to come in and go over your statement and certainly begin to prepare you for possible litigation / trial. Now, I have been saying for the last couple of months that I really hope that the NAACP and Black Lives Matter have prepared their witnesses, because back on the 15th of February and during the week of the 15th
yes.
of November, we were being told that there were all kinds of videos, eyewitnesses, and et cetera, so that the litmus
yeah.
test is now in place. Yeah.
It's
now in place.
I mean, speaking of that, I mean, do you think it's too early? Because, I mean, we have that archive because our radio program actually has a podcast that's listened to nationally. And I know we were talking to Mr. Jamar Clark, who said that he was in the meeting and they were given specific instructions.
Let's check that up and play that, and we have another NAACP member. And let's go back into history and take a look and listen to what people who were present when the issue of preparation came up. Let's go ahead and play it for our audience.
This one's a minute long. Here we go.
Prior to that, no, there wasn't any type of mention of a lawsuit even being
I don't mean to be impolite or cut you off or anything, sir, but the death of Mr. Clark happened in November, and I assume that there were a number of special meetings of committees and et cetera, because I certainly on that Sunday, the 15th day of November, saw all kinds of NAACP officials and et cetera in and around the Elks and the site of the tragedy and the death of
yeah.
Mr. Clark. So I assume that when you had your December meeting, some of the strategy was laid out and a series of motions were made to authorize the leadership moving ahead, sir.
Well, you would be assuming wrong. We didn't speak of it at all. I mean, this was the meal when I was almost thrown out. But, again, there was no mention of it then either. It's not in the
Okay, that was 59 minutes of that, Mr. Edwards.
And that was Mr. Jamar Nelson, who is an NAACP member, correct? Okay, okay.
Yes, sir, yes, sir.
All right, and
let's
hear another version.
This is the second version here.
Well, yes, I'm calling because I am also a member of the NAACP, and I was listening. I wanted to ask, could it be possible that the reason we as members don't know the specifics of the investigation, because the investigation is ongoing and the NAACP may be representing some of the witnesses. And so in that case, it's not necessary for the members to make any kind of vote on this specific investigation. You know, that's not a matter that we need to be dealing with.
It does have to be discussed. And if we join any type of lawsuit, a vote does have to be discussed either by the executive membership or by the general membership. So that's incorrect. And again, you were in the meetings. When was it mentioned to us that we had thought about joining a lawsuit on behalf of the Clark Fund? When was it mentioned to us?
Well, I think that the lawsuit, it includes the UCLA as well. So we don't know the specific.
It's not the University of Los Angeles in California. It's the American Civil Liberties.
Whichever one, you know.
Right,
it was
right.
More than one organization. So in that case, you know, that is an isolated incident, you know, where they are investigating that. So as members, it's not our business.
Lisa, I have to step in on this. You know, wait, you better read the
bylaws and protocol.
Yeah,
okay.
that's where I was going. The bylaws are specific. They are not blind when it comes to these types of actions. Okay, if the investigation is going on, this is the investigation by the NAACP or the ACLU is not a federal, state, or city investigation where it falls under the same laws that, you know, the NAACP would fall.
Well,
NAACP has nothing to do with that.
We have an investigative unit that investigates certain incidents, violations.
I'm sorry, who has an investigative unit? I just
want to
say, where's the, what?
The NAACP does. We have a branch, you know, that investigates complaints in the community.
You have a branch or you have a committee?
Okay, Mr. Edwards, that was that, because it was getting into some minutia that we didn't get into, but that was 2 minutes and 29 seconds. Of the counter caller, who's not necessarily a public person, but we know who she is, and saying that there is a committee or a branch or something or another that the NAACP has that's investigating. But we do have a caller, Mr. Edwards.
All right, let's get the caller, because I'm interested in whatever the investigative committee of the NAACP is. But go ahead.
Yeah, caller, you're live on the air. Who's calling?
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you guys?
Hey.
All right, it's Nelson. How you doing?
I'm good. I was glad. You know, I was sitting back while on hold laughing and listening to the playbacks that you guys did. Isn't it amazing? Now, as we asked the question last week and prior weeks to now, what's the next move for the NAACP? Now, I have to be rather candid. I did. I had a previous engagement, so I did miss this month's meeting. Although it was postponed, I was prepared to go to the first meeting, but it was postponed, so I wasn't able to make it. So I don't know if there was a strategy addressed or what have you about going forward, but obviously not. This is now they've been thrown for a loop. But Mr. Edwards, shouldn't they, by listening to this show or reading the writing on the wall, known that this was going to happen?
Yes, they should have certainly anticipated one of two scenarios, and the scenario that they indicated they wanted, and that was that the matter not go through the grand jury, would then necessitate a strategy to deal with that. Because the county attorney has clearly indicated that he expects to make a determination to charge or not to charge by the end of this month. And last time I looked, we have about 2.5 weeks, about 15 days of this month left, which means that the two assistant county attorneys who have been assigned to the preparation, as we talked about at the beginning of this program, will be reviewing the testimony, the evidence, the statement, et cetera. They will probably be requiring people to come in and be further examined. And they then will make a recommendation to their boss, the county attorney, with regards to what it is that he should do. Now, let's say that they recommend that he charge the police officers. As soon as that happens, their due process rights activate. And what that means is their attorneys will come in, motions will be filed, if you will. They will demand and have to receive a list of all witnesses and et cetera. Those witnesses then will be subject to interrogation, review, depositions, and et cetera. And that could go on for another 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months, right up to the election in November. If the county attorney decides not to charge the officers, then attention shifts a block over to the federal building, to the office of the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, who then will make a determination based on the completion, I assume by that time, of the federal investigative team, the FBI, as well as the Department of Justice is criminal division, on taking this matter to a federal grand jury. And this is what I was implying, sir, when I said that the grand jury process is not over. The state process may be over, but the federal government's grand jury process is not over. And in fact, the law demands and requires that any examination of the circumstances involving the death of Mr. Clark must go before a federal grand jury. That's an absolute. Okay. Also, on the issue, Mr. Nelson, of the videos and things they're talking about, only a federal judge can make a determination if those videos, whatever those videos are, can be made available.
Well, I think that, again, I hope that Madam President does not indulge or involve herself in any type of wrongdoing
more professional. You mean with any possible obstruction?
Well, obstruction, exactly. I would hope that she doesn't involve, you know, doesn't continue to have any witnesses involved in any obstruction. Look, I think that if the investigation is going to be transparent, if they ask for transparency from the city, I think that we have to be as transparent as well. You know, again, to ask witnesses not to come forward, I think, was foolish, or to be holding evidence that you know can help, I think also was silly. I just don't know, again, what the president is thinking, and because the actions that they take aren't discussed with us members. So that's why there isn't any light shed on what's going on. Again, as I said, I wasn't at the last meeting. I don't know what was discussed, but apparently, from what I understand, no type of further actions were talked about. No witnesses, the questions, there weren't any questions asked about what we were going to do with the witnesses, how we were going to prepare those witnesses, where they're at. None of those questions were asked. So, again, I don't know how the president can scream about there not being any transparency when she is engaging in the same type of things that she is accusing
of. Well, let me just say, though, Mr. Nelson, because the rubber has met the road, as we like to say. The county attorney has indicated there will be no grand jury as it pertains to the state side of the issue, and that he will make the sole determination upon appropriate recommendation to him by his prosecutors. And so what that specifically means is that the witnesses that have been talked about since the 15th day of November 2015 should begin to prepare themselves to come in and be examined. Now, the non-public person that Mr. Allen made reference to, and that the tape was played up, talked about that these witnesses had lawyers. that's great, but there is a reasonable expectation under color of law of what role a lawyer will have in quote-unquote representing your interests as a witness. You're not a target of the investigation, if you understand what I'm saying, that you are allegedly a witness to a capital crime being the death of Mr. Clark. Now, the NAACP member indicated in the discussion that we just played that there was an investigative committee that had been put together. Have you ever seen the names of the members of this committee, or is this a secret committee? Oops.
It obviously is a secret committee, but a lot of things that come out of her mouth are totally laughable. Remember, she addressed them as a branch, a particular branch that investigates type of incident.
I want to be fair, so why don't we let that caller who's called in last week come live online? You're live on the air, young lady.
Well, I do appreciate it because I have been on hold for 7 minutes waiting to respond because you did replay something that I have said. So first thing I want to say as a member of the NAACP, for the public, if you in Minneapolis, if you have any complaints that you would like to share with the NAACP, here's the number to that unit you said, Mr. Nelson, because you have a key word that you always say, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not aware. So I'm going to make you aware of this unit and this number so that you can share with people you know, being a member.
Oh, this,
the number
this
six,
particular branch that you're talking about?
The number is 612-314-6150. When I hang up, Don, you will click over, call that number, and let the public know what unit, what chapter, not branch, what chapter that is. It's headed by Ashley Nelson, and I know you know her as a member, Mr.
Wait, hold up a minute. You just said a keyword, because Ashley Nelson was just blew out of Minneapolis Community and Technical College for being a fraud.
It doesn't matter.
It's posted on my first page.
I gave you the number. You can call that
I'm not going to call her because
she's not real. No, I said the number. That's the NAACP number. You don't have to call her. You can call that number because that number.
If she's
going
to answer, I don't want to talk to her. Okay.
Well, can I say this? Another thing that Mr. Jamar or whatever did say. Now, Mr. Jamar, thank you, sir. I've always gotten that mixed up. But I want to say that as far as the what you did say in the recording that was replayed, that the information either can be shared with the general members or the executive members. So maybe there's information that has not been shared with us as general members, because I'm a general classified under
it
that general membership.
It hasn't been shared with the executive committee.
You're not
either.
Aware of that
and
unless
spoke,
you have been communicating
if you quit
with
running
one
your
of
mouth,
those committee
if,
members.
See,
no,
hold
on, hold
on.
Don't
talk to me usually when you assume.
Please, we can't.
Don't talk to me like
let,
that, please.
Let her complete all of her sentence, Mr. Nelson, if you would. Okay? she has some points she wants to make. Go right ahead, ma'am.
Okay, and so the last thing I wanted to say is, and this is for you, Mr. Edwards, as a historian. Now, as we have watched today, a breaking news, this is breaking news, that there will be no grand jury. And we know that the Madam President, that Mr. Nelson calls her, demanded, there was the community demanded that there be no grand jury because of the history of the grand jury. And I would like to refer to T.T. Franklin. Okay? We know the history of grand jury. So today it was announced that there will be no grand jury. So what do you think about that? Because when was the last time that we had any decisions made without a grand jury in a police shooting? I would like to
hear
that.
First, you want an answer from the historian? Okay, I'll give you an answer. First of all, there will be a grand jury. And obviously you weren't listening early
federally,
on. There will be.
I'd let you talk.
We can't talk over each other and be respectful, okay?
That.
All right, so let's be respectful then that you asked the question, what do I think about it? First of all, have an understanding and knowledge of the law, okay? That's the first prerequisite. There will be a grand jury, madam. It will be a federal grand jury because the federal authorities are still investigating the death of Jamar Clark. So stop making those statements about there'll be no grand jury. There will be a federal grand jury, okay? As it pertains to the fact that you asked for no grand jury, you got it. You got it. There'll be no state grand jury. And so your witnesses can prepare for trial, okay? They can prepare to give their testimony in trial, at trial, probably in about 8 to 9 to 10 months, under oath, okay? So you should be extremely happy and satisfied with that, and we hope that the witnesses that you say you have. Well, let me just say this to you. One of the ways that a system is able to hide its dirty work is that when something that people expect to have happen doesn't happen, one of the things that is said is that, well, we were very dependent upon the Negro community to come in with good, strong testimony, and they didn't do it, and we could not prevail. We could not put our case together because people did not come in with the testimony that they had said off the record that they were in possession of. And I hope for the sake of all of us and certainly the memory of Jamar Clark, I hope that does not happen. But to your question about grand jury, happy for the fact that you will not have a state grand jury, in this case called a county grand jury, examining the circumstances of the death of Mr. Clark. But there will be a federal grand jury, okay?
Yes, is that good for the community?
Is it good for the community? I don't know. The community will have to answer that because the community will have to judge the quote-unquote quality of the testimony that people say that they have as well as the videos and et cetera. So we all await that, if you will. Those of us who are on the sidelines, if you will,
await a quote-unquote offering, as they like to say under color of law, of the evidence in question. I'm quite sure that the county attorney are reviewing the list of those that gave testimony, or in this case, statements. And also, by the way, though, let's be very candid, the attorneys for the police officers are waiting breathlessly for those same names to be reported, because they will immediately have access to them to bring them in for depositions. You know what a deposition is, don't you?
Testimony?
That's right. A deposition is when you come in and you're examined by the attorneys for the other side. Though it is not a formal court process as it pertains to testimony under oath, it still is information that can be used during the course of your testimony under oath. So depositions will be in order if the county attorney makes a decision to charge the both officers or one officer, that that the witnesses will be brought in. Now, by the way, understand that that process will take 5, 6, 7 months, okay? So if we can expect the best of all circumstances, we may have a trial just after the national elections in November of this year. Okay, and let's just hope for the best. All right.
Okay, when was the last time we did that? We had a no grand jury decision in the state of Minnesota in a police shooting. Do you know when that took place? Because this is not a coincidence.
When you say a non-decision, what do you mean non-decision?
Well, no grand jury will be picked to decide a police shooting.
Oh, they've had that a number of times in the state, never in the federal. Never in
the
federal. There have been cases. Now, if you're talking about cases where African Americans were shot and killed, it has basically been fairly rare if it's been given to a grand jury, but that was many, many, many years ago. But again, this is a moment of ecstasy and et cetera for the organizations. They've asked for no grand jury. They've got it.
The burden
is on the organizations
to
present and introduce the witnesses and the testimony.
Yeah. Okay, but now, Mr. Nelson, you do know that number now. Hopefully you can share that with people that you know.
Well, yeah, sure. And Lisa, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
When did you were, because you're so frequent at meetings, when
I didn't go to the recent one, baby, just like you didn't.
Okay, well, you're so frequent at meetings, though. Was it ever discussed with us about the witnesses, or that we were going to be involved in a case with the ACLU to sue or anything like that? Was that ever mentioned?
Well, one thing about the question.
No, I just asked you a question. Just
well, I'm responding. If you can, let me respond, sweet. I don't want to call you sweetheart, but let me respond.
You may.
Don't get too personal.
You may.
Okay, that's right.
You may.
I'm a sweet guy. One thing that is so important about this case is national. So, in this show, we have to be careful of the information that we share as far as sharing some specific details when it comes to this Jamar Clark case. So the question that you're asking me about this and that, you know, I have to be careful how I respond to this. So I'll let you go ahead and share what you know.
Wait a minute. So, okay, I'm just asking again.
That's a trick bag.
Because that's public information, what the question I asked you.
What?
Is information that is supposed to – now, you just – did I end up – can I speak?
It's public information? Okay.
Yes, ma'am. What part of it isn't?
Well, if you were to ask the Jhené Harto to discuss anything in relation to this case, she would respond and say it's currently under investigation, so she can't share that information. You understand?
Oh, okay. And Ms. Nelson, let me just set you straight. What the lady is saying is that the case is still under investigation. And consequently, the NAACP and Black Lives Matter cannot and will not discuss the case. But here's the thing. With the announcement this afternoon at 11 o'clock by the county attorney that there would be no grand jury, in that he appointed his two assistant county attorneys to begin preparation,
they have already been on the phone, and I assume that the civil rights organizations have been required, because the county attorney can go to court and compel you to produce the list of witnesses. The list of witnesses will no longer be secret, and I repeat this again, young lady, is because the police, contrary to what you know some of us may think, do have the right to have access under due process. And so you can believe that the attorneys for the Federation and the attorneys for the two officers have already filed motions in the state court to acquire the list of witnesses that have been interviewed during the course of the investigation. That's the reason, Lisa, that the newspapers 4 days ago printed the story 2 days in a row in which the BCA and the county attorney were saying, we are appealing to anyone that has any information to come forward. I was a little bit puzzled by that, because I would have assumed that any person of good intention would have already contacted the investigators, if you will, and indicated they were ready and prepared to come forward with both the eyewitness account as well as the audio and technical information and evidence. But now it really doesn't make any difference. In fact, I would maintain for both of you who are NAACP members in good standing, as well as Mr. Allen, my associate here, is that next week we should be able to talk in terms of who the witnesses are that have been compelled under color law to give testimony. So we will have a pretty good idea who saw what and what individuals know.
Now, I have one more question. Now, does this show fall under the category of journalists, the media? Because the reason why
we're
I ask
radio.
That is because
we're okay, bald radio.
Well, right.
We're a news informational outlet. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and the reason why I ask that, because I remember Johnny Northside. He used to carelessly let people share information that I think
we know nothing about that. Johnny Northside was never involved with bald radio.
I'm just sharing. Well, Don knows Johnny very well. This is Buddy.
I can't speak for Mr. Allen. I can't speak for Mr. Allen. Now, is Johnny Northside still in Oklahoma?
I don't know where he is. But you know where he is. He's doing very well,
I'll say.
Yeah. Okay, but your question was,
you've said that a couple times before.
Now, I know that last week there was a flashpoint between you and Mr. Allen about a barber, some individual, a hairstylist, and et cetera. And I think you did accuse Mr. Allen of revealing his name. We went back and listened to the tape.
Yes.
Mr. Allen never revealed the name of the individual. But that individual now will be compelled to come forward and give testimony. So we'll be able to talk about his name next week.
One thing I said about that individual in last week's show, and you can repeat that, replay that show, is that we can't question, just like we have a history of in the state of Minnesota, of investigators questioning the credibility of a lot of our witnesses. And in this case, with this individual, you can't question that. And what Don said was, is he a barber? Okay. So, and I said, we have to be careful when we do that, because we want to protect our witnesses.
I'm not understanding what you're saying. How is the individual painted if you merely indicate what their vocation is? That the man's a hairstylist. He's a barber. He's got a barber shop. I mean, FBI and them have already been in his facility.
And you're laughing, but you're sharing a lot of this.
You know, I don't know.
We're not going to play that kind of game. Everyone knows who the gentleman is. They've all been talking ever since the last week in November. But again, we're on good grounds, and we should all, you know, be confident in each other. All these individuals will be known by next Wednesday, because the attorneys for the police federation and the police officers under color of law will be able to acquire the names and list of witnesses. Okay, if let me just say this to you too, my sister, if you haven't given testimony and et cetera, you'll be able to keep it to yourself, because you'll never get on the witness stand.
Well, I'm not investigating, so it wouldn't have any effect on me, no form or fashion.
Wouldn't it? Oh, okay.
Okay.
You live in the, you're part of the committee, I thought.
All right.
Yes.
Well, she says she doesn't want to talk about the committee, the investigative committee. But
no,
you
I
know
gave
what?
The number. I gave the number. I gave the number. The
yeah,
number
that was the number to the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP, right? And they will tell what how many witnesses they have, how many videos they've viewed, who had custodial control of all the information. Well, no, we don't even need to talk about that anymore, Lisa, because the county attorney is dealing with that right now.
Yes.
Okay.
The
and they're out looking for some people right now with subpoenas. So hey, you know, all we have to do is sit back and yourself and other callers call in, and we can talk a little bit about how the investigation is progressing. And just think, in 2.5 weeks, the county attorney will make the announcement. According to him, if he intends to charge these officers. Now, I want to say this to you, Lisa. That is totally and absolutely separate from a guy a block over, the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, as well as the Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division of the Department of Justice, who will make their own determinations of what's going to happen. But I can guarantee you this, as there are clouds in the sky, you know, and rain in the air, is that folks are going to be called under subpoena to give testimony about what they saw on the 15th day of November in the year of our Lord 2015. So we can all look forward to that, and it'll be interesting.
That's
so
the legal process,
again is,
and I respect
that. Number again is,
all right, thank you. Thank you, my sister. All right.
And that number is 867-5309, and who do they ask for?
No, that number is 612-314.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Edwards.
All right, thank you, and thank you, madam. All right. All right, well, gentlemen, we're down to the last 11 minutes. The phone lines are still open. We want to repeat that the county attorney for Hennepin County and the state of Minnesota has announced this afternoon at approximately 11:01 that he will not impanel a grand jury and that he will make the sole decision as it pertains to the state's representative with regards to if the officer or officers will be charged with he will not be able to charge them with quote unquote first degree murder, and probably not even second degree murder. Probably be more like manslaughter, because no way in the world you're going to get away going in that direction without taking something to the grand jury. Now I want to repeat again for any callers that we may have that want to call in, the grand jury process is still in place because the federal government is still conducting their investigation per the agreement between the three parties, the city of Minneapolis, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and the federal government, okay? I'm hearing people talk about the sheriff's department and others. They were not a part of the investigative process. So, you know, gentlemen, we just want to make sure that folks understand that the die has been cast. The process begins, if you will. I imagine that next week we will see a whole group of people going in and out of the both courthouses, the county building and the federal courthouse. This should be most interesting, gentlemen.
I certainly am anxious and anticipating what the next moves will be from the NAACP, an organization that's supposed to represent myself and Lisa and as well as Don, and although we don't know any of the actions,
Donald Trump represents me better than the NAACP in Minneapolis. Go ahead.
You know what? This is almost true. This is almost true. This is almost true. This is almost true. Seriously.
By the way, for the purposes of discussion and reflection, the videos that the Black Lives Matter and particularly the NAACP and their attorneys have been demanding, that those documents and that material is under the custody and control of the federal court by precedent, if you will. Mike Freeman cannot release that information, even if given a court order by a state court. He cannot release that information to anyone. That's the law. And, Mr. Allen, I would suggest that on tomorrow's example, you may want to talk to professors of law at your institution. They will tell you exactly the same thing.
Well, I think you know what Dilma said was, if from the beginning they knew that asking for the release of those videotapes, that that simply couldn't be happening because it would impede the investigation or certainly compromise it in some type of some sort of fashion. And so I think to continuously ask that and be that incendiary question to release the videos, well, why aren't they releasing the videos that we have? And then when that question is asked, you get people like Lisa who say, well, we're conducting an investigation and that's public that's not public information. Well, okay. So again, there is no transparency, and that's the way it will continue. Looks like it will continue, and then you have people to continue to justify for the actions that are.
Mr. Nelson, I understand what you're saying, and I'm sympathetic. But the fact of the matter is, with the decision by the county attorney this afternoon at 11:01 a.m. Central Standard Daylight Time, in which he indicated there will be no grand jury, that it will be an administrative quote-unquote criminal process, if you will. All of that is now subject to color of law. And so I repeat again, the investigators for the county attorney's office, if you will, not the BCA per se, but the county attorney's office, those investigators are now armed with subpoenas and are looking for any number of individuals. We may very well see the president of the NAACP and the entire executive committee subject to subpoenas. To come in and to give testimony relevant to their knowledge of information and et cetera. And clearly all of those people that were witnesses to the death of Mr. Clark, who had videos and et cetera, are now subject to surrendering that information. But then, Mr. Nelson, I have chided you, sir. I have said to you that I know that information, particularly the technical information, was properly cataloged, if you will, and was under the custodial control of the two chairs of the Public Safety Committee and the Legal Redress Committee, right?
No, because we don't know. No one has given that information. We don't know who had custodial control. And every time that simple mundane question is asked, it doesn't get answered, and people want to get smart and get very
defensive. And also my colleague, Mr. Allen, I'm saddened to hear that as an African-American who sees the possibility of us as a community being blamed if this case falls apart, because the attorneys for the police officers are going to have the right under color of law to demand that information be released to them during the course of preparation for the trial of their clients. I repeat that again. They will have the right under the auspices of due process to demand that the NAACP, Black Lives Matter, Jamal Nelson, Don Allen, Ron Edwards, or anybody else, surrenders all evidence and documentation, gentlemen, under penalty of law. And by the way, for organizations that have some kind of status, like 501c3 and 4, Mr. Allen, we'll be looking at civil penalties if they refuse. Of course, also you'll be going to jail. but looking at civil penalties, it could be as much as $1 million.
I have a question. You know, after, you know, about a month ago, you know, Reverend Jerry McAfee and a group coalition led by him of faith-based people went out and got a headstone for Mr. Clark's gravesite.
$1,300, they say.
Has anybody found out what happened to the money that all these groups that were having events at the Capri and here and there raising money?
Mr. Allen, I'm looking at you in studio. We are being – it's been said to us that we made that up. And so do our technicians have the specific discussion that went on that was on this program a number of months ago? Is that what you're epping up over there?
Yeah.
We have about 7 minutes left, 6 minutes. Could you play that so that we get a feel about what happened to all the money?
Okay.
On my way home, like, really?
Okay.
Everybody was fuck with my brother like that. So they don't want to let me speak. That's why I didn't speak, like, on the real shit.
Uh-huh.
That shit crazy. Because it was said that is my son, which is, I mean, that's my stepbrother. We grew up together.
Uh-huh.
It was saying he collected like $27,000. Now he's denying it. But I know it was like almost $11,000 in the account that he still has over, which you just confronted about. Like, why are you collecting $11,000? And then he wanted to put it off on Kenya McKnight, which is my sister and brother's first cousin on their mom's
side. Hold on, hold on. I know her from Minneapolis,
yeah,
right?
But Yanni, okay, that's Yanni. But
she's a Muslim. You know, she's a Muslim, right?
Yeah, before the funeral, she got a BMW truck. We seen that. And then 7 days after we came home, she got like a 2016, but she was in charge of some of the shit, too. Like, where did you get this money from all of a sudden? Like,
well,
for real.
I will say this. She's been getting big grant money around here for the public schools and for nonprofits. I can speak on her. She's been getting money doing nonprofit
right,
things.
For her, but... I understand she's in the family. There's
right.
something going on between her and my brother's brother, Jamar's brother, Boo Man, which is Eddie, and they fell out before the funeral about money. And she accused him of getting $27,000. And I was on the phone with my dad, which is Jamar's dad,
uh-huh.
when she came and told him that I'm going to set up an account for you and Irma, which is Jamar's mom, natural mom, and nobody ever heard nothing from those accounts. So,
what do you
trust me when I tell you.
Uh-huh.
It's some funny shit going on with money. It is.
So what do you need from me? What do you need me to do for you?
I need to know what the organizations was that collected this money and how much was it, because they're pointing fingers at each other of who got what.
Now, I'm not with an organization, so I'm by myself. I came up there because I'm a part of the
right,
neighborhood.
But I'm telling you the names that they just gave on the phone. My brother don't have a headphone. And from what I'm hearing from both sides, from Kenya and Eddie, is that tens of thousands of dollars was collected, so why don't my brother have a headphone?
Hold on, I'm writing this down. What other organizations you said? Black Lives Matter?
The Urban League.
Urban League.
Black Lives Matter.
Uh-huh.
NAACP. And whatever is on Penn and Plymouth. Some lady
named
Jamie.
That's the Urban League. That's the Urban League on Penn and Plymouth.
Okay, so some lady named Jamie is supposed to have open the account.
I'll check into this. Jamie and Kenya.
On Penn and Plymouth.
And how much fun?
Are you there, Mr. Allen?
Yes, I am here. I am here. We got the names and
yeah.
allegations out there in the open.
Yeah, okay.
Wow.
Maybe we'll get some calls. I know we're down to the last 30 seconds. Again, that was a broadcast a couple of months ago, if you will, on the Don and Ron program. People were saying that wasn't true, and yet later we heard that $1,300 had to be raised by a group of ministers and at least one private citizen to buy a headstone, which cost $1,300. I heard money that was up in the almost six figures, Mr. Allen. So,
mm-hmm.
anyways, we're at the top of the hour.
Yeah.
We'll be back with you next Wednesday, and we welcome
yeah.
all callers.
And I'd like to say congratulations again to North High coach, basketball coach, Coach McKenzie, and he did a great job.
Larry McKenzie. Coach Larry McKenzie.
And
yes, sir. And to all of his players and to all of the family of North High School.
Yep.
They're playing basketball.
All right.
We love that basketball.